Cool. All right. Well, as people keep coming in, we're still going to start because I am punctual and I am going to start on time because I know you guys have just eaten, your lunch and you're feeling pretty tired. So just as a quick warning, I do talk fast, so I hope you're starting to wake up. I was going to start this with a cartwheel. They told me not to do anything like that, so I'm not allowed to endanger the people in the front row, so we're not doing that at the start. But we will start with a quick introduction, just so you know me a little bit better. I wish I had time to get to know all of you. If we haven't met, please feel free to follow up with me on LinkedIn and other things. I see lots of familiar faces in the audience, so that's really good. So my name is Richard Harbridge. I am presenting the session today called Creating a Sustainable SharePoint Strategy, or something akin to that. And a couple things. One, I work for a company called Portal Solutions. Yes, we do SharePoint consulting. Of course, I think we're awesome. The key with this is that we're just doing SharePoint. So we're actually 60 people or so, and we just do SharePoint, which means I get to work with lots of other people that are crazy about SharePoint, and it creates a lot of really interesting dynamics. The second thing is that we work in this blue area. You may have heard of it, Canada and the US, and we're based out of Boston and Washington, D.C. So again, if you're local, feel free to grab me, and we'll go out for coffee. I also travel way too much, so I'm sure I'll be in your city if you want to hang out. Again, very approachable. Now, how many people were at the keynote? I'm assuming everyone in this room. Now, one of the best parts of the keynote, in my opinion, was at the very beginning where they were introducing the community. So how many people have been to a SharePoint user group or SharePoint Saturday or some of those community events, right? Lots of us in the room. Now, these are incredible events. And the one thing that was kind of a trick with the keynote was it didn't show all the user groups. There's actually far more user groups than were shown on that map. So if you are interested in user groups, many of the people in this room, at least according to my stats that they give me before the session, are business users, or they've identified themselves as business users. So one of the challenges with typical user groups is they're typically a little bit more technical, right? We've got IT pro sessions, we have dev sessions. There's also quite a few user groups now that are business-focused. So be sure to, oh, I'm getting a huge echo there. Be sure to look into, your business users and business user groups, and hopefully that audio gets fixed. All right. The last thing I'm going to mention before we move on and get kind of into the weeds of the presentation is I have recently finished a book. I'll just stand back and hope that, there we go. So I recently finished a book. It's in the bookstore if you want to buy it. Cool book about a lot of non-technical things in SharePoint. Not the techie book, so there's lots of amazing technical books. I am going to actually shout out to a couple other books. There's a new book for Essentials 2013 that's coming out from Scott Jamieson and Susan Hanley. Both are presenting at this conference, as well as a wonderful cadre of other authors. So you should make sure you take a look at that. And yeah, that's enough of the book stuff. Lastly, I do have a lot of technical expertise. We won't be talking about technical stuff in the session. This is a more of a business-focused session. So be sure to look into following up with any technical questions you have. If I can't answer them, I'm sure lots of people in this room can. All right. So, warning. For the rest of the session, I'm going to talk fast, and I'm going to talk more and more fast as I get more and more excited. And hopefully, you guys are going to get excited with me because this is exciting stuff. We're talking about strategy. That's exciting, right? SharePoint, yes. All right. So, why does a sustainable strategy matter? So, the term sustainable SharePoint strategies, why is that important? Anyone have an idea on this? I think sustainable is really important because we really need to work towards the future. Right? If we're not working towards the future, we're going to fall behind. And those who've seen this skit from I Love Lucy, you know exactly what I'm talking about. In this skit, basically, they're in this factory, they're making chocolates, and they kind of fall behind. The line is going too fast, so they start to eat the chocolates, hide the chocolates, and then the boss is coming, so they hide every single one of the chocolates in the blouses and the hats and everything. The boss looks in, everything looks pristine, looks like everything's good, so she says, speed it up, right? Now, I'm not saying that we're misleading people or that we're not showing that transparency in our organizations. The reality is we have pressures, right? We have technology pressures external. We have technology pressures internal, right? We have all these things that are going on that are forcing us to be faster and more efficient over time. And that means that we need to plan towards the future. Otherwise, we'll never be able to keep up with the SharePoint demand and the things that SharePoint's going to accomplish in our organizations. All right. So how do we sustain a SharePoint strategy? Well, first, we need agreement on what we're working towards. So there's this concept of strategy, and I enjoy the idea of game strategy. So game strategy basically says we need winning conditions. In this case, right, chess, you basically take out the other king, and you have winning conditions. Well, in SharePoint terms, what we need is something I'm going to call objectives. And it doesn't matter what you can call this goals, you can call this success criteria. I don't care what you call it. But what's important is that we have it, right? We have some way of knowing whether or not we've won with SharePoint. And of course, that's going to change over time, right? As SharePoint matures, as our needs as a business mature, we're going to create new winning conditions. But it's really important to have these winning conditions. And that's what a big piece of this conversation is going to be about today. How do we define those winning conditions and get to that point? Make sense? Cool. All right. So there's three keys, right? This session is called Keys to a Sustainable Strategy. There are three keys. The first key is achieving a shared understanding of objectives. And that term shared understanding is really important. You know, there's this basic formula for getting commitment, right? At an individual level, you have interest, and when you have interest, you start to see value, and as you start to understand more, value and interest tends to rise, and when we have interest, value, and understanding, we get commitment, right, at an individual level. And when we have that exact same formula from a shared group, right, so we have a committee or a community or some other collection, an organization, a company, right, when we have a lot of people that have similar interests, similar values, and similar understanding, we start to achieve greater levels of commitment. And it's sustained commitment, which is a key concept here, right? We can get commitment without shared understanding, but there's no way it'll sustain itself. So we'll talk about that. Now, the second thing we're going to talk about is remaining focused on objectives. And I'm going to use an analogy on this one that I really like. And it's a really, really critical one because a lot of times we forget about it. So we'll talk about that. And the last one, which is the majority of this presentation, is going to be about SharePoint-specific challenges and risks. So we're going to get into a little bit of SharePoint examples and scenarios and a lot of stories, hopefully. Now, this is not going to be all-encompassing or all-comprehensive. In fact, if you've come to the session and your hope was, Richard, I want this sort of prescription. I want you to give me this strategy. And it says, this is how we're going to deal with SharePoint. I want a roadmap. I want a PowerPoint template. I could give you those, but that's not what the session's meant to give you, right? So we're just really going to talk about this. So we're all on the same wavelength. And when we move back, you know, we go back to our offices, we're hopefully ready to really just start pushing for the strategies that we need. All right. So why am I here today? Why am I presenting to you? Well, first of all, I've been really lucky. I've been involved in hundreds of implementations with SharePoint. Our business does hundreds and hundreds of implementations of SharePoint. So I see a lot of failures and I see a lot of successes. And I see a lot of SharePoint implementations without strategies. Sometimes, very rarely, they work. And then I see lots of implementations that have a strategy and they have different takes and approaches to strategy. So today is really just trying to culminate some of those key points and share them with you. Well, to do that, I wanted to start with a quick analogy. How many people have seen the new DirecTV commercials? Put up your hands real quick. So quite a few people. These are interesting commercials. Basically, in this one, you know, he has a recording conflict. He decides to go to the bar because, of course, that's very stressful. He has a couple drinks. He finds out there's these Turkish baths downstairs. Of course, the next plausible thing is to go downstairs. He meets Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen and him decide to reenact Scenes of Platoon. You don't want to reenact Scenes of Platoon with Charlie Sheen, so get rid of cable, right? That's the primary message. So we're going to do something very similar, except we're going to implement SharePoint without a strategy, and we're going to see what happens. So when you implement SharePoint without a strategy, what typically happens is you might assume SharePoint does everything. Can SharePoint do workflow? Oh, yeah. Can SharePoint do document management? Absolutely. Can it show you web content management and publishing sites and internet sites? Absolutely. Can it do CRM? Well, it can do contact management. It can, right? So we've got to define what it does, but most of the time, you know, this happens, right? SharePoint can do everything. Great. Let's move on. Is SharePoint the perfect fit? Sure it is, right? It's more basically free. We've already got it in our organization because of our EA agreements. I mean, everyone here has it. Why not, right? It's a perfect fit in our organization. So let's move on. You install it on a single server. No, don't do this. I'm shaking my head, right? Really important. But let's say that happens. You have the fastest implementation of SharePoint in the history of the world because you literally went next, next, next. And you maybe put it on your desk so you didn't have to get, you know, your hardware acquired. And you start climbing up towards success. Why? Because you just had the fastest implementation of SharePoint in the world, right? That was pretty cool. So things start out simple. People start using SharePoint. They're using the team sites and sort of for basic collaboration stuff. But then people start to use it for different things, right? The number of sites increases. We use it for lots of different business scenarios. There's lots of different people using it. And it starts to get out of control because one, we don't have visibility. Two, we have no idea what people are using it for. Three, it's still under that desk. Four, it was based on a single server install. Five, right? The list goes on and on. This is not a good scenario. So what happens typically in these scenarios is people can't make decisions. You know, what do we do? Do we do this project on SharePoint? Do we do that project on SharePoint? Do we invest this in project, right? You know, the CFO watches costs increase. This is very true for SharePoint because, unfortunately, a lot of things require third-party products, right? Yes, SharePoint can do this, this, and this. But if you want it to do that with this, then you need these three things on top of it. And in fact, actually, that requires enterprise or standard CALs, so be careful of that, right? You know, you need to understand that. And by the way, you can customize it really easily. In fact, you don't even need to use code. It's a no-code customization. You use InfoPath forms. You have condition formatting, all these things that really are no code, right? Of course, that's not entirely true. So there's a lot of costs that increase very quickly with SharePoint. And a lot of these things are surprising to organizations that don't have a strategy. Another factor is, you know, you can't support the flood of new requests because people are using it for all these different things. And there's an expectation that they can get response quickly because they're getting the sites quickly, right? They're getting what they need very rapidly. And lastly, we have a big problem, which is people can't find what they're looking for because we have the sprawl. We have challenges, not just, by the way, of sprawl of the number of sites and things like that, but we have issues of information governance, we have information architecture challenges, we have navigation challenges, and the list goes on and on and on because we didn't have any strategy for those things. Hopefully none of us have been in this place. So as a result, a lot of people who didn't implement SharePoint without a strategy, and I don't think this has happened hopefully to you, but you might have been that person falling down the stairs. And today, my goal is to make sure you are not the person falling down the stairs. So we want to be not that person. All right, so don't let that be you. Don't implement SharePoint without a good strategy. Make sense? I'm getting nods. All right, let's move on then. So we said the first one was achieving a shared understanding of objectives. So let's talk about exactly what that means. Now, I'm going to use an analogy. I want you to use these analogies, too. When I go through these examples, I want you to be able to reuse them for yourself. By the way, this is recorded, so you'll be able to look at them after. So the first example we're going to use is a very common one. It's actually the idea of a GPS. So in my car, I have four timepieces. I have four ways of checking the time. I have my cell phone. I have a clock in the dash. I have a clock inside of my CD player. And then I have my GPS. Now, if I don't put a destination into my GPS, it's a glorified timepiece, right? It's a very expensive one because mine's over $100, and I really don't use it for what its intended purpose was. So if you use SharePoint in a similar analogy for just file management and file sharing, you're probably not really using it for what you paid for, right? So that's something to consider. Now, that's not the analogy I really want to use today, although it's a fun one. The analogy I want to use today is if I want to get somewhere, right, if I have a destination, I have to be specific about my destination for the GPS to be successful, right? If I put in New York and I end up in the middle of New York State, that's probably not where I meant to be. If I put in New York, New York, that's getting me closer, but again, it's in the middle of a large city. It's very, very confusing and difficult to navigate around. If I put in a specific address, there's a probability, a pretty high one, that I'm not going to get there as long as I don't have user error, which is something we can never really deal with, right? So what we want to do is the more information we give the GPS, the more information it gives us. Right? The more information we give it, then it tells us, you know, the roadblocks, all these wonderful things in modern GPSs that tells us. So what we want is when we're coming up with our destination, we want some way of guiding us, right, towards that destination. And I think the key point here is not that we want this GPS and we want all these different, you know, inputs and dashboards and things like that. What we really want is a very clear destination or goal. Because if we don't have one, it's really, really difficult to get to that point where you can start to come up with how far are we from that, all these other factors. Make sense? Awesome. All right. So these are common objectives, right, in implementations of SharePoint. I see this all the time. So these are called platitudes. These are words people hide behind because they sound really good. We're going to centralize knowledge and resources with SharePoint. All right. That's great, right? We're going to enhance collaboration. Awesome. How do you know when you've enhanced collaboration enough? How do you know when you've done enough business processes or what your winning conditions are for that? Or in fact, how do you even know how to do some of these things? Because when you look at these objectives, because they're so abstracted, you can only come up with abstracted solutions. We're going to use SharePoint's collaboration features to enhance collaboration. But you're not really going to be able to say, we're going to do this very specific thing to enhance collaboration because you don't have very, very specific objectives. So these are bad objectives. If you have this in your vision statements and you have this in your governance documents and stuff, I'm saying, bad, bad, bad. So we want to avoid this. What we want instead is we want SMART objectives. And this is a very common saying. And by the way, I'm Canadian by birth. And so in Canada, we learned this right after hockey appreciation in grade school. It's a really early thing. So I'm hoping most of you have heard this before. Right? We want specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, time-bound objectives. Now, specific is the one I want to focus in on today because I think if you can get specific, everything else kind of falls through with it. To be honest, it becomes very easy to come up with these other things. Now, this is just guidance I'm providing. So we're going to focus on specific, and we're going to talk about how to take these objectives and make them more specific. Now, these are platitudes, right? We said that earlier, but that doesn't mean we can't ask about this, right? If the organization has an interest in automating and improving processes, we can say, well, what kind of processes? Why is this of interest to the organization? What value is this going to provide? And when we start to ask those types of questions, they'll start to give us more information. They'll tell us that we have paper-based processes, we have legacy ones, we have these other processes, and you know what, we have some for legal, we have some for HR, and so we'll start asking more about this. Well, what legal processes do you have that you're having trouble with? Well, we have these paper-based ones for contract management. So what happens in our organization organization is we get, you know, these new contracts, we send them physically as paper to the legal department, they review them, they send them back, but the problem is we have no visibility into the processes, right? So we're zooming in a bit more. We have no visibility into the processes. It takes a really long time to get a request whether or not they're even gonna look at this contract or when they're gonna have it done by, right? So you have all these challenges, and this is very common. We can take any, I'm picking a specific example, but it doesn't matter. The key here is instead of saying we'd like to automate and improve our business processes, we're saying we'd like to automate and improve our paper-based legal contract management, contract review processes. Specifically, we want to improve response request time by X amount of, you know, hours or minutes or whatever it happens to be, and we want to do it in this way. So now we're getting very specific. So at this point, can you come up with specific objectives? Or solutions, sorry. How many people in the room are you're all SharePoint people. How many people are starting to think of solutions for this? Well, we can do that with workflows. We can do InfoPath forms. We're going to need a site, right, for people to come and do these requests. We might have some dashboards to tell us, you know, where these requests are. We might have some reminders in the workflow for alerting people, right? So we can come up with solutions that are specific because we've gotten to a level of specificity that's required for our objectives. Now, there's another key point in this, by the way. Now, this is easy to do, by the way. If anyone is worried, you know, breaking these objectives down, it's very easy to do. And IT is typically doing this with organizations, in mature organizations. So if you're not doing this, give it a shot. As an IT thing, it has nothing to do with SharePoint, right? We're just saying, in general, these are the problems in the organization, and you start mapping it to the technology and the solutions afterwards, right? Because now they're specific enough, you can start to do that. All right, let's move on from that for a moment and talk about another piece to this. In this drawing, there's a lot of colors, right? So I have 1, 2, 3, I have priorities. It's really, really critical for not just us to define the objectives, but to define the priority of each of these objectives. Right? We have to say, how important is this objective? Is this more important than this one? Which one should we do first? And sometimes there's technical dependencies. Sometimes this is a really complicated process, right? Determining priority. Well, I'm going to try and simplify it. And I realized simplifying anything has all sorts of drawbacks, but we're going to simplify it for now. Again, we come up with all these solutions, right? So technical dependencies are determined by defining the objectives and understanding the technology. If you have a fundamental understanding of the technology, you'll know the technical dependencies. So move on from that. We're going to talk about prioritization. And prioritization is basically two things, right? It's the value, often measured in dollars or the value it's going to have on the business, and then difficulty, sometimes measured in Chuck Norris as it shows here, right? So what we want to do then is we want to use a very simple formula. We want to say value divided by difficulty. And this makes sense, right? This is the basics of ROI. This is the basics of doing any sort of value estimate in our organization. And this is how we prioritize things. Now, it's critical that you don't take just the value and prioritize everything based on the business value, because if you don't take the difficulty into account, you have no idea how complex and challenging that's going to be to implement and how costly that can be to implement. So, in other words, typically the technical team, whether it's the IT group or, you know, people and communications that are kind of doing the training and other types of rollouts, but anyone who's delivering the technical solutions, they're typically going to tell you the level of difficulty. And the business or the stakeholders are typically going to give you the value. Make sense? So if we use that formula and we just do some basic math, right, if we take a simple scenario, we can see which one we should do first. And we can even use the term ROI if you want, because that's what you're doing, right? This is a very, very basic ROI, but it doesn't matter. You don't need to make it really complex. Honestly, you don't. A lot of organizations that just do this basic thing on every single project, every single objective, they get a lot of value out of it because they determine which objectives should be done first. And these can be very broad-based. I'm not saying use numbers out of 10, but you can certainly use pretty big ranges, right? This, if you have a range, right, there's a sort of a idea of confidence. If we have a lower range, then we are a little bit more confident that that range might be accurate versus low. Anyways, I'm getting stuck on the math. All right, so it's really important to prioritize. So if we define specific, SMART, right, specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, time-bound objectives, if we do that and we prioritize them, then we have the foundations for a really good strategy. In fact, we have a shared understanding of objectives, because one of the challenges with having these platitudes or these abstracted objectives is that people can't agree on what the objective really means. The interpretation is very different. If we get down to that level where we're talking about contract review processes, it's pretty hard to get confused about what that really means. But if we talk about automating and improving business processes, it's very easy to get into discussions where I think of it as one thing, you think of it another, right? So that's also really important. So we want everyone to understand these objectives, and the way to do that is to be specific and then to have priorities. And the priorities need to be communicated to both the technical delivery team and the business, and they need to work together to make sure that's a culmination. All right. Makes sense? We're moving on to the next one because we only have 55 minutes left and I'm acutely aware of that little time thing. All right, remaining focused on objectives is also really important. So this is a big challenge in organizations because some organizations are great at defining objectives and projects and things like that, but then they kind of fall apart here. Because, you know, I've done this before. We implemented that solution, right? We implemented the workflows, we implemented that InfoPath form, we implemented the site, right? So we're done, right? We achieved our objective. Does anyone agree with me there? No? Right? We haven't achieved our objective because our objective was to reduce response request time, right? We had very specific things and we haven't achieved that objective. So now what we need to do is we need to take that further. We need to say, what about implementing SharePoint? It feels good, doesn't it, when you've got a nice server farm, you've done your 2013 upgrade, yes, but have we achieved our objectives? The upgrade alone is extremely rare that it actually achieves any objectives on its own, right? It's extremely rare to implement any technology upfront without any investment and it to achieve objectives. There's always this other piece, and we'll talk about that piece. And we're going to use an analogy to do it. How many people agree with me that this is the greatest human accomplishment of all time? Humanity got this thing to Mars. And we were actually able to like do cool stuff on Mars. It's like, it is the neatest thing that we've ever done. Now, this amazing accomplishment was not easy to actually achieve, right? And the real goal of this, initially, was to determine if there was ever water on Mars. Now, there were other objectives, there were other missions, but the primary scientific objective of this was to basically get, you know, characterize soils and other things like that and determine if there was water on Mars. All right, so that's our objective. Now, to do that, we have to do a lot of things, right? We have to build these rockets, these incredible rockets that aren't just going to get it up into the atmosphere, but they're going to get it to that other planet. And then it has to land on that other planet, a planet we've never been to, right, that we have to use instrumentation to understand. And, of course, there's another challenge here, which is the rover itself has to be able to power itself, right, these nuclear generators. It's amazing, amazing accomplishment. Remember, this is back in 2003 or whatever, right? We were able to create these self-sustaining, amazing, amazing robotic machines. So we do all this, huge, huge, million dollar investments, right? We build all these things, and then comes to launch day. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, boom, right? We launch. We didn't blow up, which is important, and we launched. Mission successful? No, not yet. All right, so then it goes through this whole elaborate process. Have you ever seen the videos? It's a really neat process where it actually breaks apart, right? The boosters come off, but then it actually kind of does like a spiral motion and it shoots towards this little tiny, tiny, tiny target, which is Mars, right? Way, way out there. And when it shoots towards it, what do they do? In that whole flight, this is like six months, right, of distance between Earth and Mars. So it's going on this flight, they're adjusting trajectory, right? And it's harder and harder the further it gets from Earth. Because communication is delayed. Just like when you implement SharePoint, right? You implement it and it gets further and further away from you, right? It's harder and harder. So that analogy kind of makes sense. Then they have to deal with a really big challenge, which is the Martian atmosphere, right? Could you imagine dealing with storms that you can't even fathom, right? Temperatures that are extremely difficult to predict. So they're dealing with really challenging things. If you think user adoption is challenging, try planning for Martian storms, right? So this is a big challenge. But then they land, and now, you know, it gets solar power, it boots up, it starts driving around. Have we achieved our objective? No, right? Only when, you know, after a couple months, it starts to bring data back. After a couple months, when it starts to tell us with relative definitiveness that there was water on Mars, and indeed there was, so that now we're starting to achieve our objective, right? So this took a long time. And the key was, how important was launch in that process? Now, pre-launch is really important, right? We already talked about it. We need to define objectives and all this other stuff. And not blowing up is important. But it's not as important as that landing. So what I'm saying is, instead of being this person, right, that thinks about launch as being the most important thing, don't focus on it. Now, that's kind of counterintuitive. I'm saying ignore launch. Who cares about launch for now? Just don't blow up. Instead, let's focus on the whole thing, right? Let's talk about pre-launch. We need to have our objectives. We already talked about that. We need to be able to determine how we're going to achieve them. That's our solutions, right? We're determining our solutions. Then we have launch. Not blowing up is still important. We move on to flight. So in the flight, we need feedback, right? How often do we implement something, a solution in our organization, and it works just out of the box? It works for everyone, there's no problems, right? We need that feedback because the amount of effort required after it's implemented to make small tweaks is often, especially with SharePoint if done right, is extremely low, right? It's very, very cost effective, and it has a huge return versus not doing it. So it's really important to do that, adjusting our trajectory, if you will. And lastly, we need to gain enough adoption that this is sustained. In that scenario where I took that business process, if everyone didn't continually use that process and they started working around it, then we wouldn't have achieved our objective, even if initially it looked like we did, Right? Even if we are starting to see those numbers come through, if everyone stops using it, we're not achieving that objective. So it's really important to focus on this last part especially, right? Landing, getting the adoption, and qualifying if we're achieving our objectives. All right. So I want you to all be those people that are focused on achieving objectives. And the next time you guys have a launch party, rename it to a landing party and delay it for a couple months. All right. So back to our friends at Mars Rover. Mars Rover is an amazing thing, right? So here was basically when they achieved their objective. The launch was a little bit up there, and then the distance between basically Mars and Earth. And then there's all this other stuff. These are all other missions, right? We're getting more value out of our investment. So we already know that launch isn't as important as all this other stuff, but this is also a really critical factor. We came up with a primary objective, but then once we achieved it, we had this investment that could deliver more value. So we figured out new ways to get more value to the investment. In fact, one of the rovers is still going today, right? Which is an incredible feat. So we've gotten massive, massive returns on this initial investment that seemed very difficult up front, right? There's a high risk, but we implemented it just like our intranets, right? Maybe we start off, we get some key things done or this business process, but then over time we start to do more and more and more and more, and we really don't need to do a lot. We might reuse the basis of this process, or we might reuse the understanding that we learn and other things like that, or we might reuse even the champions and the other business benefits that you're getting when people start to leverage SharePoint effectively. All right. So we talked about achieving a shared understanding. We've talked about remaining focused on achieving objectives. Now we get to deal with the hardest section to really cover in a very short amount of time. And this is planning for SharePoint challenges and risks. Now, SharePoint is really, it's a painful platform to work with, right? It's very rewarding because it's challenging, but it's also very, very difficult to work with at times. And we'll talk about why it's a little bit difficult, and we're going to talk about it in some focus areas. Now, the first key point that I need to make is that having a strategy and having winning objectives is not enough, right? To have a sustainable strategy, we need to be ready for the future. Right? We need to be able to predict things. We need to be able to work towards things and be able to handle increased loads and other challenges. So in other words, if we think of our game theory, right, when we think of that, you know, checkmate and other things like that, in chess, the way the game works is the person who thinks further ahead wins. Right? If I think two moves ahead and you think one move ahead, I'm probably going to win. I am going to win. It's not probably. If you think three moves ahead and I think two moves ahead, you're going to win, right? So in that role, it makes a lot of sense and it's relatively easy. The difference here is when we're dealing with SharePoint, we don't really know all the contingent states, and we certainly don't have as much control as we do in a game of chess. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't plan for a lot of those contingent states, right? How to deal with it when this happens? How do we deal with scale when this happens? How do we deal, you know, with these types of requests and other things that might come from the business? So we're going to talk about specific examples of those, and we're going to do it in a way where we're focusing on these terms, these ideas. Now, I could do this other ways. I've done it before where we do, like, based on containment hierarchy. We talk about very technical, right, the farm and then web servers and stuff like that. Instead, we're going to actually just talk about this in language that hopefully we can all agree on. And the goal is to basically work towards the future and create that sustainment. All right. So the first thing we need to realize is we need our business strategy. And a business strategy in this context is just what we've already done, right? It's defining objectives, it's prioritizing those objectives, and it's hopefully eventually determining solutions to achieve those objectives, right? That's a business strategy. There's nothing else to it. Now, there's fancy ways of doing it. We could do road mapping. There's lots of things that are really important to coordinate around it, but at the core, this is what it's meant to do. So do you have that in your organization? Are you defining objectives, not even for SharePoint, just in general, objectives for all your technology and other things? These are the things that we want to achieve, and then mapping that to the appropriate technology. So that's one of the first, that's pivotal, right? Without the business strategy, we'll never achieve what we want. Now, there's also this idea of technology strategy, and this is a challenge with SharePoint because SharePoint can do so much. Now, I was working in an organization, there's actually a colleague from there here now, and the organization sales director came to me and he said, I really want to use SharePoint for you know, contact management. I want a way of managing contacts in sales. And I said, well, there's a couple ways we can do that. We can create like a sort of contact list and you can use it like that. So we kind of worked through this process where we built this contact list and he started using it. So 2 days later, they go off, they start filling up this contact list. He comes back to me and he says, Richard, this is great. He's got all of these contacts in the contact list and everyone's starting to use it. And he says, the one thing I really want though, kind of like HR, he points to another site, you know, they have this thing where they can kind of classify things. They have like a drop down. So I just want a way of classifying my contacts. I want to know like which ones are leads, which ones are opportunities, which ones are accounts. I'm like, yeah, that's easy to do. Let me show you how to create a I want to show you, make sure you can do this. show you how to create a column. This is how you create a column. This is how you create the choices. And then, sure enough, he goes off on his own. Now, 2 hours later, because, of course, things are becoming more rapid, as you can all imagine, he comes back to me and says, I created all these columns. It's gorgeous. He's got all these columns. They're all filled out. But yeah, I have this other problem, which is sometimes accounts, they have an address for the contact, but that's not the address I want to mail to. I want to mail to their headquarters address. So I need a way of tracking headquarters versus the, you know, the contact's address. And I said, well, we can create an accounts list, and that can have headquarters information, and then we can kind of use a lookup column. We can create. Does everyone see what's happening right now? Right? So this is not a good thing. We're creating basically a CRM inside of SharePoint. Now, SharePoint is not the right platform for most, almost every situation. It's not the right platform for CRM. And in this organization, we were actually doing a Dynamics rollout, so we were going to roll out Dynamics CRM, and so it made sense to make it really about Dynamics. Now, that doesn't mean that we stopped. That doesn't mean that I said, nope, we're not doing this anymore in SharePoint. It means that there's value in defining these requirements more, being sure that we're going to be able to merge or migrate from this ad hoc or prototype-based solution to CRM, to make sure that they're engaging with the CRM team and they understand what we're doing and this is going to be positive, right? So we had to do all this work, but the key was we knew where that dotted line was. We had defined what that dotted line was, where SharePoint really isn't the right solution anymore, right? And that happens all the time. I'm sure you can come up with your own examples where you started to build something in SharePoint and it grew and scope grew and then you're like, oh, maybe SharePoint's not the right platform for this. A very common one is lots of relationships between lists, right? All right. What about cost management? What is the single number one reason why SharePoint is a really, really big challenge within organizations to staff? Anyone got an idea? The single biggest reason it's a challenge is because unlike ERP implementations and other projects, there's not this significant upfront cost to implementing SharePoint. Now, I know that may be misleading because you're thinking, well, it's a lot of work to implement SharePoint, right? We've got to figure out the server farms, we've got to do all this other stuff. It's really, really, really easy from a high level compared to the other ones from a cost perspective because on an ERP implementation, we're going to have millions of dollars in costs. On a SharePoint implementation, you have already basically paid for it, right? Most EA agreements have SharePoint. And so to most organizations, they look at it, you know, from a very high level and they say, well, we already have this. We should take advantage of it. And the amount of consideration for it is not as high because the price tag isn't as high, right? And so you're not thinking about all the factors of other things. Now, we know, and everyone in this room knows, that support is really challenging with SharePoint. There's other factors and other costs, but it's really difficult to see those costs initially. So there's this hidden cost of SharePoint that's really important to understand. Now, these aren't negatives, by the way. There's lots of times where SharePoint is much more cost-effective overall and it still works out really positively, but the key factor is the organization needs to understand that this is like ERP. This is a significant investment. And if you're one of those organizations that you have like one or two SharePoint people, I've been there, I've been the one SharePoint guy, right? We've all been there. So if you're that one SharePoint guy or girl and you're the superhero and you're trying to keep everything together and you're trying to get those other people on your staff, one of the reasons that that's so challenging is SharePoint doesn't have the visibility from a cost perspective. Now, the second reason this is a challenge is because many organizations don't have a revenue and cost transfer model that works for SharePoint, right? What typically happens is IT's cost of ownership goes up and it never really goes down when you've invested in SharePoint. And the reason we want it to go down, we want it not necessarily to go down, we want it controlled, right? We want to be able to bill back to the business. Now, it can be funny money, it doesn't need to be real money, but the key reason we want to be able to bill back in some way to the business is that we can measure the amount of effort and work and other things we're doing with the business. And when you do that, when you do any type of chargeback, even if it's funny money, it's fake money in the organization, even when you do that chargeback, you have to prove the value you delivered. And it's a good thing. It makes us go back to those objectives and make sure we define those objectives and can clearly tell how we added that value. All right, so let's move on to another one. So governance, can we talk about governance in 3 minutes? I think we can talk about governance in 3 minutes. So this is my quick analogy on governance. You can implement, you can have the best sports team in the world, right? You can have the best talent. Now let's say football, I actually moved to America mainly for football, so it's awesome. So in football, you can have the best players, but if you don't have structure, you don't have roles, you don't have teams, like team structure, you will be a failure on the field, right? You will not perform well. And this is really interesting because if you think about it, if the quarterback is sometimes playing the linebacker position, sometimes he's doing the kicker position, that's not going to be an effective team. But if we start to create roles and responsibilities, right, and we start to train people, and we start to create patterns and practices and plays, right, we all know plays, right, we start to create those plays, those are what contribute to our team performing better, right? And when we think about sustaining, right, when we think about sustaining SharePoint and getting more out of our initial investment, that's what governance should be. So I'm saying don't think of governance as risk mitigation, which is important, and it's one factor of it, but really think about more of it being something that gets more out of your investment. Right? You spend all this money and time and effort. We want to put some controls, some coordination, some guidance, some empowerment around it to make sure that this is going to be effective and richer and other things like that. Now, many of you in the room may not like American football, or you may not know the analogy because you're from other places in the world, and you're deprived of this amazing sport. So I will tell you something different. So this analogy, one of my clients once told me, and I love it. How many people have sons, daughters, nephews, nieces, right, around like maybe 10 and younger? When they play soccer or football around the world, when they play this, it's the cutest thing ever. It's kind of like mob ball. They all kind of gather around the ball and they run around, and then the second they have an opportunity to kick it, they kick it. They don't care where it goes. And while it's really cute, that's not what we want in our organizations, right? So in his words, his organization was basically playing mob ball all the time when they dealt with SharePoint requests, right? You get a new site request, they're all like, I got it, and then they just try and get it out versus saying, okay, the business analyst is gonna get it, he's gonna pass it on to the infrastructure person, they're gonna figure out the quota, how much resourcing they need, then they're gonna pass it on to the developer, they're gonna figure out, do you need any workflows, do you need any customizations, what kind of third-party products do you wanna use, this is our, our marketplace of capability within our organization, they pass it back to the business analyst, business analyst says, here's your site, also you get training, you get this, right, these are all the things you get, you also have to sign these documents, right, whatever it happens to be. Right, so there's a process, there's a play that's well-structured. Analogy makes sense? You guys can shout out. You can say, yes, thank you, love you guys. All right. So I also decided throughout this presentation to add some links, and I'm gonna take a second to show you a couple of these. So the first thing is, in my website right now, there's a bunch of governance documents, and you can go and take a look at these at any point in time. And when you look at these, they have some samples. So these are not meant to be perfect. I've worked with lots of organizations. They're just meant to be starting points. So if you haven't done a service level agreement, you haven't done a security policy, these are some good starting points or guidelines. And of course, I only have so much time. So if you request a template or a governance sample from me, I will provide it to you. I just can't figure out which ones to share with you guys or which ones to spend the time scrubbing. So let me know. Another thing that's a link inside that slide deck is an intro to SharePoint governance and this sort of how-to. Now, this is a white paper that's not released yet. It's from AvePoint. It should be released this week. So it goes through all this other stuff. And why I'm going to highlight this is because there's a whole section on how-to governance. And you can see that I've highlighted activities. And the activities have example artifacts. They have a purpose. So it actually goes through actual activities that you perform to achieve governance in your organization. And I'm not saying this is the templates, the documents, right? The things, the artifacts that come out of it are not as important as the process in which you're going through that. All right, so we'll move on. So there's some links there, and then there's some standards and some other stuff. You can look at it yourself. All right, another question we often have is, what about business processes? Do we have a business process strategy? And one of the challenges with business process in SharePoint is this can get very complicated very quickly. So one of the things that I recommend, if you're starting this, a lot of organizations, they still haven't gotten there, right? You kind of got your communication, you got your collaboration-based environments, but you haven't really gone into this whole business process portal and all this other stuff. So if you're not there, that's okay. Start simple, right? Start with notifications. Find all the processes where just a notification step would be super helpful and put that into SharePoint. Easy to do, high return. Another easy one, reminders. You have a process that has some sort of due date, right? So you put it into some form-based or other reporting that we have reporting, but more importantly, you get the reminders, which is gonna help people accomplish their jobs and tasks. If you have things that have a cycle where it goes from one person, then it gets assigned to another person, it goes to another person, rather than counting on manual assignment of that, right, and people sending things to each other, why not automate that, right? Why not simplify that process for them so that SharePoint sends tasks to each of those people? These are all very easy things to do in SharePoint, right, using SharePoint Designer or the out-of-the-box workflows. And these are the things you should be starting with. Now, if you're an organization and you've already decided to move towards, one of the, onboarding or whatever it is, whatever type of business process you've decided to tackle, that's fine. I'm not saying don't do that. I'm just saying make sure you understand that there's different levels of business processes and there's different levels of support and there's different levels of examples that you can provide in your organization to help the business build. And I will make a key point, and this is not mine. Virgil Carroll has this great point that he made, and I really like it. He said, one of the problems in a lot of organizations is they come up with these business processes that they think are like winners, right? They're the best business process to start with, right? Gets adoption and stuff. And the example that he provides, which is a really good one, is expense reporting. Right? Or not even expense reporting, vacation and time scheduling, right? So I wanna take some time off, I wanna do absence management, things like that. And so you can put that in SharePoint, but how frequently does that happen? Pretty infrequently, right? Maybe once a year, maybe twice a year, it's very infrequent. And when people do it, they don't really wanna do it in SharePoint, they just have to do it in some way. So that's not going to generate demand and interest, right? It's the things that are, like I said earlier, those notification steps, those reminders, things that people actually enjoy, you know, not being pestered, but actually finding value in these notifications. Those are the processes that are really going to get you the initial traction you need. All right. What about infrastructure, right? This is a really big topic. We can go into great depth. By the way, on each of these slides, there's a bunch of questions that are hidden in the notes, so be sure to download the deck. These are questions you should ask to determine where you are with some of these strategies. So one of the things that I think we're all guilty of, everyone in this room who's ever been to central administration, and I know many of you have, how many of you, by show of hands, and don't fake this, have this red bar right now in your central administration? That's right. For those who don't, I know you're lying. Right, so we all have this bar. And the reality is it's telling us there's critical issues, there's something wrong. Now, if it's not an actual issue, if you've read through these things and you understand them and you say these aren't real issues, then get rid of them, right? They're not real. There's false positives in this list, right? There's the user profile thing and some other things. We can get rid of those. And then, by the way, let's never come back to this list again. Trying to go to central administration and know that something's wrong is the wrong approach. Now, what I'm really saying is that you should have a monitoring strategy and you should have a maintenance strategy and you should have all these other things for a SharePoint, but we'll just use a simple example. In this list, if you turn on RSS feeds or if you have alerts, you can get alerts when new items are added to this list or you can get RSS feeds. Yay, we never have to come back to this list again. Good idea, maybe? Another one is deviating from default settings. Everyone in this room should deviate from the default settings of SharePoint, right? The default log locations are terrible locations. There's all sorts of things that are wrong out of the box in SharePoint. And so what we do is we deviate from those. But how many of us do a good job of documenting that and how to go back from that and why we made that choice in the first place? And there's lots of times this happens. A very, very common one is we increase the size, the upload limit for documents, or we do other things like this. You have to be really cautious of these things because if you make that change, you should be documenting it. You should have a strategy. You should have an understanding of the implications of that and so on and so forth, right? This is pretty common knowledge. All I'm saying is we need to have a strategy for infrastructure. And I don't mean just the servers and the hardware. I'm really talking about SharePoint, right? SharePoint infrastructure. Now, there's subsets of infrastructure. And the one I'm going to use as an example, this is not my comic. It's from SharePoint Comics. It's an awesome comic. And I'll give you guys a moment to read it. Now, I have had this happen before. I will admit, and first time I read this, I was like, oh, yes, that is where my SharePoint disaster recovery plan is. It is inside of SharePoint. And that's probably not the best place for it. But the reality is we need to come up with disaster recovery strategies. We need to know how are we going to deal with disaster in our SharePoint environments. Now, my favorite thing to harp on this is not DR in general and farm recovery and all these scary things. If the volcano erupts in your, you know, neighborhood and it destroys everything, how are you going to deal with that? My favorite things to harp on are the things that I see many organizations forgetting. They do a great job of doing disaster recovery strategies for overall SharePoint, but then when you ask about, oh, well, how do you recover your QA environment or your dev environment, they don't really have an answer. And then when you ask the same questions on a different level and you say, at an item level inside of a site, when an item needs to be recovered, so basically says someone says, I can't find my document, I've deleted it, how does that get handled? Is it an immediate SLA and is it the SLA responsibility on that user? Is that SLA responsibility on the site admin? Is the estimated responsibility on IT support services, right? What about when it's site is deleted? How is that dealt with, right? So you have different hierarchies of recovery, right? And there's different hierarchies of backup and other things that we think of. Even versioning settings, right? And coming up with a strategy on how you're going to deal with versioning in SharePoint, which, by the way, you should not just turn on versioning across the board and say, infinite versions for SharePoint, it's great, right? The quick analogy there is if you think of back in the day, we had these filing cabinets. When you had a lot of versions of a document, it was really visible. Right? You'd have all these printed versions, and they're falling all over the place. You're kind of buried in them. So we didn't keep a lot of versions, right? We were trying to be smart about this. It's not that we didn't want those versions. It's just we realized most of them aren't necessary. And this happens again. In our file drives, we have version 1, version 2, version 2 final, version 2 final final, right? All these other documents. Well, that's very visible. In SharePoint, it hides that, right? We have to see the versioning settings to see that there's all these versions. So it's really important to set some limits on those types of things because over time, especially now with wonderful thing called shredded storage or Delta storage or whatever you want to call it, these new capabilities, they're very, very valuable, but you know, if you already have a massive number of versions, they're only going to add value from that point onwards, right? So there's lots of things that we can consider here. All right. What about performance? So a colleague of mine once said that performance is the most unsexy topic ever to talk about. So I agree, kind of, but I think that there's ways that we can make it more interesting. Now, I'm going to take a slightly different approach with performance. I'm going to tell you a bit of a story, and we're going to make it a little bit different. We're, instead of talking about cost savings and the time it takes and those types of things, we're going to talk about it in a way that impacts the customers of our business. right? So there's lots of times we're using an analogy or some sort of breakdown where you're saying, this is how it impacts if we're university enrollment rates. This is how it impacts if we're, you know, a healthcare provider, better patient care, right? Those are the things that we want to eventually break things down to. If we can take performance and we can do that, that's pretty good. All right. So in this law firm, if the portal takes 2 seconds of loading time extra, right? This is extensive time. It's just like 4 seconds, and it takes 2 more seconds to load this page, and everyone's going to this page on a frequent basis. Is that really a bad thing? Well, if we do some simple math, because math makes everything more exciting, and we say 300 attorneys, our bill rate on average is $300 an hour, which is fairly accurate. Attorneys visit the page roughly 50 times a day. We assume a calendar year of 280 billable days because we all work too much. That basically means that $700,000 of value, right, to the customer is being billed to the customer for waiting for that portal page to refresh. Now, granted, they're hopefully thinking about other things, they're doing other things, but in general, what we're saying is, technology-wise, they're not working on that document, they're not working on that deliverable, they're waiting for that portal to refresh. So $2 million over 3 years, basically, of added value to customers is something we maybe could provide. Now, I understand this math breaks down very quickly, but the point here is not the math, it's not even the numbers, it's saying that we can tell people in some way. And even if it's not a convincing story, we can at least make a story that says, this is a positive impact at the end of the day for something that matters to us, in this case, our customers and the value we provide them, right? So that's what we're doing here. We're saying we can do that. And if it's $2,000 max, to do optimization for performance in SharePoint, easy, right? IIS compression, we do some caching stuff, we maybe optimize the HTML, right? Those types of tasks are very easy to do, so it's going to be really cheap. $2,000 for $2 million of potential gain, maybe that's an easy problem for the business to say, go, right, move forward with this. Or maybe not. Do you have a support strategy? A good colleague of mine, he's a CIO at an organization, he called me up a couple years ago and he said, Richard, I have this problem. And my problem is that I have way too many support requests for SharePoint. I have 30 a month, and my support team can't handle these additional support requests for SharePoint, so I need your help. I said, okay, well, can you send me the support tickets? Now, unfortunately, there's a lot of red tape involved, and he couldn't send me the support tickets. So I said, let's do something different. I'll come in, we'll do some interviews, right? We'll all come in and we'll do some interviews with the different people in the organization, specifically the support team, find out what the common issues are, and we'll figure out an action plan. So we go in, we meet with the support team. The most common issue is permission management. That's right, permissions is a nightmare. It's difficult in SharePoint. So permission management. So we decided we're going to do a couple things. The three things are, we look to friends of SharePoint, like AvePoint, Accelerator, other companies like that that have wonderful permission support and manageability frameworks and the tools that help with that. So we looked at them and we said, we're advising you to maybe purchase this one, and we worked through that process. And the second thing we did is we went and did workshops with end users, right? We did permission training. And the third one was we provided a lot of the permission training, the things, the artifacts that we did, we provided as just-in-time training. So inside of certain scenarios, we know the permission screens, it kind of has like, not sure how, what to do here, you know, in the top right, you could click on that, you could see more training. So we did some pretty active things to really make permission management easier, and this is back 3 years ago. So after that, anecdotally, we had huge success, right? I've got all these great stories where people are like, yeah, this was great, I really enjoyed the training, or you know, one of the support people saying, yeah, permissions is not an issue anymore, right? And I really like this tool that helps me manage it. Well, 3 months later, I get a call, a very irate call from that same colleague and friend of mine who's a CIO, and he says, Richard, I'm very upset. I'm very upset because I'm getting 100 tickets per month instead of the original 30 I was getting. So what have you done, right? So I said, send me the tickets, and it was the only way to do it. He sent me the tickets. Now, the secret is it's really easy to go through a series of tickets and categorize them if all you're really looking for is SharePoint permissions related or non-SharePoint permissions related. So it took me less than an hour to go through hundreds and hundreds of these tickets and basically say, these are permission related, these are not. And what we found was before we did the training, over 20 of the 30, well over 20, in many cases 29 in 1 month, of the issues were permission related. After we did the training, 2, 5, 6, right, numbers of permission or issues were permission related. The other issues were because people could access the darn system, right? So it's really important to measure things, and it's really important to have some sort of categorization beyond SharePoint, right? That's a long winded way of saying it. Now, of course, there's more beyond support, right? We need to have different ways because people learn in different ways, right? So we need to have different methods for teaching. You know, there's all sorts of other challenges on that. Another big one is development strategy. Now, many organizations I work with say we do not have a development team for SharePoint, and we don't have an intention of building a development team for SharePoint. And I say that makes total sense. And they say, well, so we don't need a development strategy. And I say, well, do you have third-party products? Do you work with third-party providers? Do you have people that use SharePoint Designer internally? Yes to all those? Okay, then you need a development strategy because you're still doing development in SharePoint. The reality is there is not a single out-of-the-box SharePoint implementation I have ever touched, ever, in my life. And that includes organizations that are 20 people, that includes organizations that are 10 people. Right? I've never seen a completely vanilla out-of-the-box SharePoint. Somebody at some point cracks open SharePoint Designer and does something, or someone at some point does some little bit of HTML or JavaScript code inside of a content editor web part or whatever other method they're doing to embed it. Right? So what that means is we need to have a strategy for how to deal with these things. We need to have communities of practice. We need to have patterns and practices. We need to have ways of sharing those practices. We need to have some standards. We certainly need some standards to guide external consultants and external developers and other people when they're working with our environment in terms of how to deploy. We won't accept anything that's not a WSP if it's a farm level solution, so on and so forth, right? So we need complete instructions so we can roll back. We need to know exactly what's custom, what's not, all these other factors, right? Make sense? So this is something that's really important. Another really interesting one, for those who have been at the conference, you've heard of Business Critical SharePoint. For those who are maybe hearing this at a later point, Business Critical SharePoint is an awesome idea. Microsoft has really been pushing this idea of helping organizations understand that SharePoint can really be that hub, right? It can be that way of integrating different systems. And I like that idea. Personally, I like thinking of SharePoint as a really complex and useful interface. Right? And there's lots of ways that you can leverage that. You can use InfoPath forms, you can use BCS and other services to do dashboards and reporting and other things, but really it's just it's a glorified interface in most of those scenarios. It's really rare that it's doing more than that. Well, if we think about it, most people know that it works really well with Office, but it's not as noticeable that it works great with a lot of other Microsoft products. Now, many of us in our organizations are not just using Microsoft products. Here's the cool thing. Most other products that are large enterprise products, they work with SharePoint as well. Almost every product nowadays that deals with some sort of collaboration, reporting, other things, they have some way of integrating with SharePoint at this point. So you should understand what those are, and you should take advantage of those opportunities, right? We want to leverage this. We want to get the value out of our SharePoint investment by connecting it to other systems. And the value can be very, very, very substantial. This is, in terms of maturity, if you ask people, like, how satisfied are you with your SharePoint implementations, right? You know, that's a vague term, but in general, satisfaction is based on, typically, how business critical it is and how many lines of business applications and other things you've integrated it with. There's a correlation there. It's a very positive correlation that tells us that the more you do that, the happier and better satisfied you are with SharePoint. What about adoption strategies? So quick note, I did share on my website a number of adoption activities. So you've probably heard of some of these over the last couple days. These are awesome, awesome activities. And if I can click a little bit more effectively, there we go. So this is a list. There's over 50 here. Some of them are pretty straightforward. Building an acronym wiki is a good way of getting people on board with acronyms and wikis and other things and introducing them to certain concepts inside of SharePoint. One of the more interesting ones that I once worked with an organization, a very different organization, they actually had a Charlie Sheen user profile. This is obviously during the time where he was very popular on the news and everything, and they would update it on a regular basis with all these funny things, and people would go to this profile, and they got used to a lot of the social features of SharePoint back in 2010, right? So they really learned a lot of that stuff. So that's a really neat one. There's obviously that's not something for everyone, right? But every one of these activities that are listed here have seen some level of success, right, in terms of getting adoption. All right. Now we're going to tell a quick story. In the 1950s, they created the greatest invention of all time, instant cake. Right? You basically add water and, you add water and butter and some other stuff, and boom, you have cake. Right? Just bake it. Oh. So the scientists at the time were like, this is the greatest invention of all time. Everyone's going to buy this. We are geniuses. And what happened? No one bought it. And they couldn't figure out why. Greatest invention. Why aren't people buying this? Well, they had all these focus groups, and they got all these people together and said, why aren't you buying our product? And unanimously, people said, the reason we don't buy it is because we feel like we're cheating. We don't feel like we're part of the process. You know, we don't enjoy it as much, right? There's all these other factors. They're like, really? And they're like, okay, so we're going to make it harder for you. Betty Crocker did something very weird, right? They made it harder. They added friction. They added user involvement, right? What they did is they removed the egg from the cake mix. And to this day, there's no scientific reason to have eggs out of cake mix. In fact, as a result, I get eggshell cake. But the reality is it sold really well. It sold like hotcakes, pun intended, right? So this is a really interesting concept. And I think it's really, really pertinent because at the end of the day, there's lots of these adoption activities and tricks and things you can do for adoption. But the reality is this. If people aren't involved, right, it's just hard to do. Involving people is hard to do. But if people aren't involved, you're not going to get the level of adoption you want. And it's not certainly not going to be sustained. The more they're involved, the more ownership that they typically take on. And the more ownership they take on, the more they drive adoption versus you driving adoption. I'm not saying you can't do adoption without it. I'm saying it's much easier to do over time. It's certainly much harder initially, especially if you work with attorneys, teachers. There's a lot of specific user types that are very challenging. I'm sure every one of your users is very challenging. All right. Then there's staffing strategies. So everyone here, if I asked, who feels like they have enough SharePoint talent, they don't need any new hires, would not put up their hand. Everyone needs SharePoint people. It's really challenging to hire for it. It is right now. And part of the reason it's so challenging is because there's been 900% job growth, or 800 to 900% job growth in SharePoint over the last 5 years. That means there's 900% more jobs on the market, open recs. These are not like closed, these are open recs, positions, right? On the market right now, 900% more than 5 years ago. And what's more, there's a lot of other challenges that come from that, right? There's more director level positions, there's a lot of other influences here. So this is a really challenging thing, and the key factor here is when we think of our strategy, if we don't have those objectives, right? If we don't have all that stuff that we talked about at the beginning, then this is really hard to get the money for, right? If I can say we can achieve these six objectives with SharePoint in the next 6 months, if we hire one more resource of this type, not a super resource because those don't exist, we need a SharePoint developer, or a SharePoint IT pro, we need an end user developer specialist, whatever it happens to be, you use your own language, but you define what that role needs to be, and you can say to the business, I need this role to achieve these objectives, and I guarantee you they'll fork the money over if those objectives are important enough, right? Why? Because they understand the objectives. They don't need to understand SharePoint, they need to understand how are you achieving these objectives, and if they do, you'll get the appropriate money to hire these very difficult, and hopefully you're all doing very well, expensive resources. All right, mobile strategy. The gist of it is, everyone has a mobile strategy. So some people say, do you have a mobile strategy? And some people say, no, we don't have one. No, you all do. It's just that it's probably out of date, right? So we have to think about these things. I think it's a really good opportunity with 2013, putting a little bit more emphasis and considering it a first-class citizen, that we should think about mobile a little bit more. And by the way, SharePoint does not do mobile out of the box. It really doesn't. Contemporary views and stuff, I'm being honest, sorry, Microsoft, it's not that great, right? What you really want is you need to figure out how do we build designs that will work in mobile experiences, how do we define what are the perfect opportunities for people to work remotely or with these mobile devices to accomplish their tasks. Workflows are a great one, right? If I have a workflow, I have a task. If I can work with that task through my phone, that's a good idea, right? There's specific scenarios that make sense. Other scenarios, it's email-based, right? We're sending emails and things like that. And there's some challenges with even that. If your SharePoint environment right now is not available externally, but you do allow people to get email notifications from SharePoint, what happens when I'm on my BlackBerry or my Windows phone or whatever device I'm on at this conference, I get an email for a notification, it's alert, a document's just been checked in, I click on the document, I can't access it, right? So it can actually be very disruptive. So mobile is obviously a big consideration for other things like access and all these other factors. Search, I'm going to start speeding up. So search is another area, right, of significant interest, obviously big investment. Big thing in search, just look at your query logs, right? Look at those failed queries. Look at the things that aren't working. The number one search result in every internet in the world is Google. That's correct. Yeah, you win an award. So Google is the first result. The second result, Google. No, I'm teasing. It's not Google. So first thing you should do, best bet, at the top of your search results for Google, done, right? And then, of course, in the new system, there's not best bets, but you're going to do result types and other things like that that'll work for it. Social strategy. I'm going to give a quick example. Now, you get very technical very quickly, right? There's a lot of technical considerations for social. But let's just take it one step back. One organization, they decided that they were going to implement social, but they were going to do it in a different way. They had three large organizations, so it's we'll just say who it is. It's Disney, right? So Disney has three different organizations. And they determined what they were going to do in the interactive group was act a little bit differently. Instead of running three, you know, different social implementations, they wanted their primary, you know, discussion, if you will, and the primary discussions, the top things that roll up, to be very business-oriented, to add business value, right? Load Runner and all these games, right? They wanted to talk about how did we scale, you know, in cloud environments and things like that for these. So those are what the conversations they wanted. And the way they did it is they had whitelisting or white labeling, right? Where they basically said, you can only get access to this environment if you have a business reason versus not having a business reason. And of course, you can't sustain that, so over time, the secret is they didn't actually have to get approval, eventually just auto-approve people. But because people have to fill out these forms and they feel like they need to suggest why they need access to the system and it has to be a business reason, the top result is not who's hotter, Ryan Gosling or Ryan Reynolds, right? The top result is a business value scenario. Anyways, that's an example. There's lots of other examples, hundreds of examples I can give you for how to implement social. It's really important to have a strategy around that. Cloud is another big one, right? I can't have a presentation at this event without talking about Office 365 in the cloud, right? So I'm gonna skip over this and just say three things. One, you should understand how to evaluate cloud providers. Not all of the cloud providers are the same, and there's a lot of understanding that goes with that. There's 70 questions plus on that site. You can go to it. It's nothing but SharePoint. Great stuff there on other material. The second thing, you can see a couple graphs there. Those graphs are independent research. So a lot of customers we work with say, should we go to Office 365? Should we go with one of the vendors that are in the vendor hall? Should we go, on-prem? Like, what's the right solution for us? And so a lot of it is math, right? It's talking about the numbers. So I've asked many of the consultants in the room and other consultancies, how much do you charge? How much is your bill rate, right? What is the cost of implementing SharePoint? So one, those numbers are in there, so you can kind of be like, hey, you guys are overcharging us, right? I'm not saying do that, I'm really saying you could try. And then at the bottom there, that white paper is also a summary of a lot of that. So there's two things. One, the data is up on my website, the raw data in Excel format. You can play with it, you can do whatever you want with it. And then this is a white paper that kind of summarizes it, explains why you might want to look at cloud versus non-cloud and other factors like that. And there's a lot of data behind this. I wish I had time to go through it. All right. So we all get it, right? We need a comprehensive strategy. We need to think of all these different focus areas, and we need to figure out how are we going to approach them. There's ones I didn't have time to cover today. Taxonomy, right? Usability, right? There's hundreds of other things that I haven't had time to talk about. Specific ones for workloads, for public-facing websites, SEO, right? There's lots of things that we didn't get into, but we need to think of. And I know it's a lot to think about. I'm just asking you to think about it. All right. So we had talked about achieving a shared understanding of objectives. We've talked about remaining focused, and finally, we've kind of covered quite a bit of material on how to plan for certain SharePoint challenges and risks. So now let's do a do-over. Let's redo that first section we did earlier, and we'll talk about why we're here, right? So when you implement SharePoint without a strategy, this is what happens. But when we implement it with a strategy, especially a good strategy, this is what happens, right? Basically, it starts off very similar, except now we have clear objectives. And the objectives are prioritized, so we know what we're trying to achieve. We have winning conditions. And the next thing we do is we know that SharePoint's part of our overall enterprise technology plan. It doesn't sit on its own. It works with other things. There's investments, right? There's lines in the sand. And we're climbing our way up to success, but the difference here is we're pacing ourselves because we know that there's quite a bit of distance to go. And we know that launch is not as important as post-launch, right? It's not as important as landing successfully again and again. And we also know that it's really important to understand SharePoint, to have a deep understanding of SharePoint, and to think of a lot of these areas and having strategies for some of these. And by the way, there's obviously dependencies and there's an appropriate way to roll through these things. And as a result, first, you get an award for Richard liking you. Two, decision makers have enough information, right? This is an actual thing. If you start to get these things, they have the information they need. Two, we also reduce costs, because we have an understanding up front of what this is going to cost, and we're figuring out better ways of leveraging our investment to reduce costs, to get more value out of it, and so on and so forth. And of course, IT services can support new requests, mainly for the first reason. We have objectives, and we can tell how those objectives are being achieved, right? It goes back to that staffing strategy and some other factors around that. And people are actually able to find what they need. And they're not just able to find what they need because we don't have site sprawl. You might have site sprawl, but the difference here is you have site sprawl with a good navigation strategy and how you're going to deal with navigation and taxonomy. You have a good strategy around how you're going to deal with search. And so search is working, and you're doing updates and other things like that to make search work for users, right? And so on and so forth. All right. So my goal is for you to all go home feeling awesome. That's my goal. Not falling down the stairs. We want to be this guy. To do that, it's really easy. Be the person with a good SharePoint strategy. And with that, I'm going to do two things. One, I'd like to invite everyone to come up to the, is there mics? Yeah, there's a mic there and there's a mic there. So if you want to come up to the mics, please ask through the mics because this is being recorded and it's just easier to remember. And two, feel free to download anything here. We do have a contest going on for a Surface. I kind of want to win it. So if you all don't enter, I might be able to just get it by, de facto. So it's up to you. Also, please fill out your evaluation. So if you have a chance and opportunity, please do that. I think I've hit all the sort of key points. So come up to the microphones, ask some questions. There are no dumb questions. Anyone have one? If you have to shout it out, that's okay, and I'll repeat it. But I know those are far away. All right. You can put up your hands. I'll give up on the mics. Oh, is that maybe? No. All right. Who has a question? Hands. Do I see questions? You got to really put it up. Oh, I see one. Yep.
A lot of things, a lot of
So I believe the question was, this is a lot of information, which is accurate, and it's difficult to kind of figure out how to start with it and kind of like start using this, right, leveraging this. So the first thing I'm gonna say is, this whole conference, there's gonna be a ton of stuff you're gonna forget, and there's gonna be a ton of stuff you're not gonna really use right away. Now, a lot of it is gonna be value in technical things, right? You're gonna look at the decks and you're gonna be like, oh, this is how I do this, or this is how I approach this, or this is how I build my farms, and this is the topologies I should use, and so on and so forth. For these types of business things, I think there's three key things to take away. One, what are the stories you can use? And I know that's a weird one, but stories have a lot of power inside your organization. So if there's some things that I gave as examples here that you can say and you can use, you should use those analogies. The second thing that's probably a little bit easier to leverage is that there's a lot of resource links in the slides. And again, all the slides that I went through that talked about strategy, they have a bunch of questions in the notes. So if you download the slide deck and you walk through those questions, if you can answer all those questions, you're probably a little bit further ahead in some of those strategic areas. If you can't answer all those questions, it gives you some areas of thought and areas to start. The reality is most people hire consultants like us to come in and ask questions. I mean, really, that's all we kind of do, right? And we just help you sometimes to determine the answers. So I'm trying my best. One of my goals is to kind of get rid of paid consulting forever with SharePoint. So one of those things is giving those free questions. So if there's any other things that I can do as well, my third thing is, if you have questions, ideas, specific challenges, email me, follow up with me, and I'm sure there's something I can do for it. I say this to everyone, I say, abuse my card, my business card, and I still can respond to all my emails. So something's wrong or people just aren't asking enough questions. More? Yeah? That's correct. So all the decks from the conference will be available on my SPC. Mine is on SlideShare right now. I'm assuming I can still do that. I'll find out. If I get my hand slapped, it might come down. But I think right now, at least mine is on SlideShare right now, so this is very easy to get. You go to SlideShare or Harbridge. If you find my blog, it's also inside the speaking section of my blog. I put all my slides up there. So there's literally 80 or 90 slideshows that I've done on SlideShare. You can just find the ones that are pertinent. Sure. So the question is a very good one, and it's sort of revolving around support, but I think it's a little bit more broader. So the question was, when we are planning for resourcing in SharePoint, how do we approach that, right? What kind of cost models do we use? How do we kind of convince people that we need, you know, these types of recs, and how do we even hire? How do we, you know, really there's a lot of questions, I think, embedded in that. So I'll say a couple things. One, it really, really, really helps to have someone who understands SharePoint doing the qualification, right? So if you don't have that skill set strongly in your organization, let's say you are a business user, you know, you have some experience with it, you've done some business solutions, but you've never really done development, and you have an open rec for a SharePoint developer, you should qualify, but you shouldn't be the only one qualifying that resource, right? You should find someone you know, a person you can trust, a consulting company, I don't care who, someone who will help you qualify whether or not that person has the skill set and the knowledge required to basically perform the tasks, right, that are assigned to them. So that's one trick that's really important. Another one is sometimes people get caught up with needing a SharePoint resource because they kind of see it as a panacea. And it makes sense, right? Because a lot of times we run into these challenges and issues and we say, if I can just get somebody else to come in and take care of these things, then, you know, the world will be better. And so we often create these roles and open requisition for new roles in the organization that have way too many responsibilities. And the responsibilities are almost conflicting, right? We want a business analyst who also does development, who also does IT pro, who also does, you know, business strategy. And you're not going to find, you'll never be able to afford, is probably a better way of phrasing it. You'll never be able to afford that person because we're going to hire them, right? So it's really important to understand we want to be as specific as possible. And sometimes you can leverage existing investments. So a lot of organizations, you know, I work with, I look for other people in the organization that could fill that role, right? That may be looking for that new type of opportunity or may want to take on some of those additional responsibilities, and you can kind of distribute it as a part of another role, right? So there's a lot of that happens in organizations. What else can I say about that? From a cost perspective, I think it's important to see industry numbers. So you saw, I showed the 900% job growth. It's also important to notice there's a thing like this, it's kind of dipping. The number of job openings is actually decreasing for SharePoint right now, so that's something to keep in mind. The second thing to also keep in mind is that salary information and other things like that is available online. So if you go to salary.com and other things, you can get a starting point. I think it also really helps to ask other people. If you're friendly enough, get enough drinks, and people, they'll typically give you an idea of, you know, what their requisitions are and how much they're willing to pay for people. And you can get a feeling for whether or not you're really under. Most people are under budgeted, right? When they create these SharePoint recs, they have these amazing people they're looking for, and they don't have the budget to really bring them on. And sometimes you grow them, right? I don't know, I'm not sure if that answers the question, but we'll hope for it. More questions? We've got another 5 minutes. If you put up your hand and you make a little noises, I'll also see you a little bit better. Oh, yeah. To create. Yeah. I think that's a really good point. So the question was, there's a couple questions, but I'll focus on one of them, which is, there's this challenge when we provision, we'll use the, I think site's a good analogy. When you provision a new site in SharePoint, how do you still put restrictions or enforce certain things without feeling like you're being bureaucratic or that you're slowing down their process or that you're stopping them from accomplishing what they want? And I think there's three tricks to that. The first one is you have to be engaging and empowering. So when you're doing that stoppage, when you're saying, wait a second, let's slow down for a moment, that slowdown has to be valuable. If the slowdown's not adding value, then you shouldn't be doing it in the first place, right? There's lots of ways to automate the tracking of new sites and who created it and like who that person is. So you can see in a big list, like this person created this site. So when a question comes up with the site, you can respond to it. And by the way, proliferation of sites is typically a good sign, right? If you have a lot of sites, the question really is, do we have search still working? Is permission management still working? So sometimes the issue isn't that somebody's creating a new site, that's a challenge. The question is, why are they creating the site? Is the site the right thing for them? Can we help educate them and give them something better? And sometimes that's proactive, sometimes, you know, that's reactive as they make the site request, and sometimes that's a follow-up afterwards, right? Where they come to you because they've seen in a marketplace, you know, one of the things I'll talk about in my other talk is this idea of like a SharePoint showcase. So you have a number of people who have done these really interesting sites or business solutions, and you take screenshots of them and you kind of write a description, and you don't put, you know, IT as the leader of that, you put that person, right? That person or group that drove it, and they contact that person and say, well, how did you do this? What value is it providing you? Is it working? And what it ends up doing is cost ownership decreases. It doesn't feel like IT is the roadblock. It feels like they're collaborating and working with other people to improve whatever the result is here, right? So I think there's a difference between empowering and constraining. There are minor situations where you might put in quotas and you might impose other things, but I found most of the time when you have a quota or something else that restricts users and they go and do something that's actually like not necessarily the right thing, they try and upload too large of a file, let's say, or they do something that's a little bit outside those boundaries, most of those boundaries make sense. And there's a lot of reasoning. And as soon as you start to describe, like, I really want to allow for this, but here we have these alternatives, right? As long as you're ready with those alternatives, then most users are satisfied and it's not a real issue. So the key is, if you're going to implement something like site provisioning and you're implementing policies there, they have to add value, and you have to assess, you have to measure, are they adding value, or are they more restrictive, are they not, you know, working for people? There's all sorts of different ways to approach that. It's not a perfect answer, but at least it starts that question. More questions? 2 more minutes? Feel free, by the way, to leave if you're all done. All right, I'm just going to end it. If you have more questions, come up, say hi to me, and thank you, everyone.